Well, hello, good evening to all. Welcome to Let's Talk Together. I am your host, Lady T. Bonsoir, tout auditeur. Communauté haïtien qui fréquente Sugarien 96.9 FM avec une émission à nous parler ensemble. I hope everybody is having a wonderful Christmas. It is indeed the time to be jolly. And I have the privilege this evening of having my friend, my mentor, the one and only Julian Reed, that inspire us all to become who we are today. It is a pleasure, Julian, to have you on Let's Talk Together here at The Guardian Radio. How are you, Julian? Welcome.
Good evening, Lady T. And really, you've just made me feel so humbled. I mean, I don't know if I'm responsible for all that, but first of all, let me say that I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
You have a show that's been on here for 3 years now, mm-hmm. right? And that's not an easy feat, you know? And then I also see what you're doing. You're trying to bring people in the Haitian community that are here that may feel a little left out and
yes.
may not be able to assimilate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we want, you know? Everyone needs to... It's great to have your Haitian heritage,
mm-hmm.
and you should never let that go.
No.
But you got to remember your Bahamian too.
Of course, definitely.
That's and by the way, since we are bilingual here, bonjour tout le monde. Oh, bonsoir.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir. All right. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you, Julian. Now, I'm going to make the show about you a little bit, right?
Oh,
because I've always inspired you, watching you from, several, decades. I want to ask you, what inspired you to become a journalist first?
I'll tell you, it came from my first big career as a diplomat, a foreign service officer for the Bahamas. I was based in London. And one of the many responsibilities I had, and I have to say thank you to people like Dr. Patricia Rogers, His Excellency, the former High Commissioner, Arthur Folks, and especially Wendy Roll McKinnon, who really trained me in everything about foreign affairs. And there are others, of course, too. But one of the things I used to do while I was based in London was organize big events, like
mm-hmm.
so... Independence in particular.
Right.
Right. And whenever we had independence receptions,
mm-hmm.
we invited a lot of people from the British media.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to meet a lot of them and talk with them a lot. And they always had the most interesting stories.
Mm-hmm.
So from then I had it in my head that whenever I left the Foreign Service,
right.
that I would head into the broadcasting world in particular.
Okay, good. How long have you been a broadcaster?
Woo.
Since I was a baby, I've been watching you.
It's scary. People tell me they grew up on me. I can't believe
I've been watching you.
I guess I really
you.
Am old. But I'll tell you how it happened. And it's really, I always believe that it's the Almighty who was involved in this. Because
mm-hmm.
I wanted to get into broadcasting, and I started to make some moves toward it.
Right.
And I went to... the post office, the old post office, which was on East Street, we had to go there. And I ran into someone whose name you will know very well, Buena Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've known Buena from St. John's College time, so I've known her forever. I love her, very good friend. And she said, "What you doing now?" And I said, "I'm trying to get into broadcasting. I want to be broadcast." She said, "You serious?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Yeah." And at the time, she was at Love 97, Jones Communications.
Right.
And she said, "Well, if you're serious, we have an opening right now. Why don't you come on audition?" And I did,
wow.
and the rest is history. So in March of 2002, I started at Jones Communications, 1197, mm-hmm. and the rest is history. And as life would have it, full circle, I'm doing some work that really makes me happy too right now at Love 97.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
And of course, I've been to ZNS in the meantime, but and also doing work for ZNS now too.
Wow.
So, you know, it's good to be retired, you know.
That's what I said.
Work
right?
doesn't stop.
You're retired now, right? Wow. Okay. Now, doing your time, right, as the broadcaster, what was the most difficult story that you had to cover in your entire career?
Wow. Difficult.
I would say touching.
Difficult, and I think it will be, it really has to be, the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. We were fortunate. I was with ZNS full-time then.
Oh, you went to Haiti during the earthquake right in 2010?
Right after the earthquake. And, you know, I had spent 2 years as a diplomat in Haiti. it had such great memories for me because, actually, that's where I saw the Fugees live. Mm-hmm. I was like in the third row in front of the Ministère des Affaires étrangères, the Foreign Affairs Ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great time seeing the Fugees live. But we had the opportunity to go into Haiti after the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a little Cessna plane. We flew from Nassau into Inagua. And from Inagua, and this pilot was really daring, and I guess because, you know, air space rules were relaxed at the time. And we literally flew over the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And I don't know if you've ever seen the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Port-au-Prince.
Mm-mm.
Well, it is palatial. It really was the most beautiful building.
Right.
And all, it was literally flattened. Just nothing left. It was so incredibly shocking and painful. And we landed, and then we moved around Port-au-Prince, and we went into the outskirts. I can't remember which hospital we went to, but what was astonishing to me, we'd seen people who had lost their entire families,
right,
just them left. I'd seen people who had no arms, no legs, and they're all in this hospital that had minimal resources, and they were still able to say, you know, we're grateful to God.
Right.
Very, very touching. I think that was probably the most difficult story to tell. That I've experienced.
Right.
You know,
because I remember doing my time, here. You know, it wasn't that it was in 2010, right? The earthquake took place in 2010, wasn't it?
Yeah, the earthquake was 2010.
Yeah, 2010. And I remember watching it on TV and tears came out of my eyes and I wasn't even there. So I could have imagined how you felt to be like actually on the ground, seeing, you know, what happened to those people, what they went through, because at that point it was in no water, no food, nothing. The hospitals was limited, like you said, and Haiti had always had difficulties, and to see such tragic took place, they didn't had enough resources.
Mm-hmm. I used to live in a hotel called Montana.
Montana,
which
Montana.
Was fabulous. I used mm-hmm. to love,
it is still fabulous.
I used to love going there for Sunday brunch, and you know, part of that went down
mm-hmm.
During the earthquake as well. Actually, someone I knew personally, she died in the earthquake. So it affected.
Was she a Haitian?
She was Haitian. Yes, she was the brother of my cousin at the time. She was the brother, her brother was married to my cousin at the time. So I knew her. She'd been to Nassau, and, you know, they lived off Delma. You know, they had a good life and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just very sad to know that someone you knew personally,
right,
beyond seeing all of these people you don't know, struggle. And, of course, even from when I was there, and I was in Haiti between 96 and 98,
mm-hmm.
and the hospitals were overcrowded then. So you could imagine what it was like during the earthquake. I don't know how, you know, without the international community helping Médecins Sans Frontières and, you know, sort of entities like that, there's no way they could have actually serviced those people. But it really, I think, without doubt, I think that I've covered.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you know, seeing something here, like Dorian, but I didn't get to cover that.
Right.
I think that would have been the most.
That would have been most of the greatest, impact.
Because you're trying to. Actually, they gave me more strength because you're trying to be strong for them, and you're trying to be gentle and polite, and asking them to tell their story. Where
you're trying to be professional at the same time.
Where they've been through really something that most of us couldn't dream of going through.
Right.
And they're still willing to tell their story, you know.
Even though they were in so much pain, I could imagine. Mm-hmm. That was something that was actually, you know, that was a lot that day. I remember watching on TV, as I mentioned, like it still feels so, you know.
That's vivid to me.
Right. Yeah. It does. Okay. So, as a broadcaster, what are some advantages and disadvantages that you have?
Well, and I think the greatest thing, really, you have to say, and it's not an experience, the greatest thing is that you're able to impact people. You can impact them in a positive way, you can impact them in a negative way, mm-hmm. but you try to impact them in a positive way. And I hope that's what I do every time I take to the mic, say something that inspires people, right. Make them realize that, you know, while we're here, we can do the best that we can do. And that in turn inspires me,
right.
You know. Also, and I have to give the Broadcasting Corporation of the Bahamas some kudos on this, because during my years there, I was able to travel to every island in this country. And that is a gift that you just can't describe. This country is just so amazing. The people are amazing. The food is amazing. The culture is amazing. Mm-hmm. Even when it's in hard times. I remember Francis and Jean, one of them, I can't remember which one, I was in Cat Island, then going into a storm in San Sal afterwards. It is, to me, this has been a great passion that I've been able to, and been blessed to actually, and still doing actually, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to do a little recap in Creole, because I've seen that I didn't say anything in Creole, because, you know, I have a lot of Creole listeners. It is, you know,
I will try to participate, but I haven't been speaking Creole for a while.
Would you like to assist me? And
I don't know if I could. That's the problem. I might get some words wrong. In French, I'm a lot better, but anyway,
but
go
in
ahead.
In Creole, you struggle a little bit. Utande, man. We're going to have to fix that. So today what we're going to do also, after I recap everything that you said, is we're going to teach the people a new Creole word today. And you're also going to learn one yourself.
Wonderful.
Et communauté haïtienne, bonsoir tout le monde qui branché. Tout auditeur, auditrice, nous connaissons nous live dans Guardian 96.FM avec Metopam qui c'est Julian Reed. Julian Reed, c'est un gros journaliste et qui était dans journalisme pour presque, I would say, about 20 plus years.
2002, 22 years.
Yeah, 22 ans. Il gagne 22 ans comme un journaliste dans pays nation. Tout le monde gagne respect pour lui. Il connaît un monde qui toujours fait dans sa ID et lui propre. Et m'a demandé de temps et il est journaliste. M'a demandé combien de temps lui fait. M'a demandé et qui bagaille qui t'est fait, qui était inspiré pour être un journaliste. Je dis à un parce que ça, un monde qui a. On connaît il pas easy pour un monde dans télévision toute journée et on aide monde et on cover toute qualité histoire, so ça tellement difficile. Là on a un monde que on connaît, un monde qui bon ami avant, un monde qui est très m'kadjo qui respecte pays et communauté, li c'est un magay qui pour des chapeaux bas pour lui. So je dis à me donner une opportunité ça pour me t'inviter dans émission ça, parce que me tellement aimé Julien, I really love and invite Julian. So I'm tellement respected Julian, so I'm bien content pour m'inviter là, because I've been telling him he was supposed to come on the show.
It's been a while.
So I'm tellement content d'esque il était pour occasion ça, because you know our schedules are not, you know, sometimes this is a very important man, so he has a tight schedule. Vous comprenez? Il tellement important, so he got a schedule.
Not as important as you might think.
Qui tellement qui tellement tight, so I'm bien content qu'a dit nous aujourd'hui d'esque il là avec nous. Me demandé que dans tout temps il était journaliste, mandé qui histoire que il était couvert qui était tellement difficile pour lui. Il dit comme ça, c'est là il est allé dans mais quoi qui était fait Haïti, dans tremblement de terre qui était fait Haïti dans 2010 là. Il dit comme ça, c'est un bagage qui tellement te touché, un bagage qui expérience dans la vie, il pat reme, y telman te, you know, fragile, late we en kalite bagay kon sa. So, y di nan tout la viray, se sa ki te touche. Police le fini, di, y di merci a tout moun ki te vini nan la viray, paske y tap travay pou gouvernement deja, men late ale y we qualité ça qu'a fait lui dit comme ça il t'a remis pour était un journaliste et c'est comme ça les mêmes il était un journaliste c'est comme ça les mêmes la impacté la vie moun la vie communauté et pays ça tout. So Julian,
and I can actually understand what you're saying. It's been a long time, but it's great.
It's great.
But,
you can
say. If I could say one thing, though, right? You know, when I went into Haiti, and I'll tell you if you don't mind.
Of course, I would love to.
I just returned from London. I'd been in London from 98 to 96, and I was recalled, and you know, expected to be in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for at least a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, we were having a problem in the Haiti embassy. Someone was selling visas,
right?
Unfairly and wrongly,
right?
You know, there was fraud going on, and so I was told, okay, you just need to come and help, because I had actually quite a bit of consular experience.
Mm-hmm.
So come in, help us deal with this, so we can get this under control, and hopefully we'll find out who's, you know, doing these things with the visas.
Right.
I was supposed to be there for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, oh, you know what we're going to do? We're going to send you to Brazil for a year to do a course. So I was all excited. Got my visa to go to Brazil. I'm ready to go. And then like the week before, they said, the person who was going to replace you got cold feet.
Mm-hmm.
She won't come to Haiti, so you got to stay.
And you gotta stay to Haiti.
Yeah. And that wasn't a bad thing. I was disappointed about Brazil, but it wasn't a bad thing.
How long were you appointed there?
I was in Haiti for 2 years. But let me tell you this. Either you love Haiti or you hate Haiti. And I was very fortunate.
J'ai été à Haïti pour 2 ans, entendez? Il a été à travail pour ministère étranger. Il était voué à Haïti pour 2 ans. Julian, I didn't know you was in Haiti for 2 years.
2 years, yeah.
Oh, it is.
And you either had a choice. You either loved Haiti or you hated it. I was fortunate that I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it on so many different levels. And I was there at such a good time. Right, because
mm-hmm.
it was a time when I had a lot of hope for Haiti, and
everybody always does.
I was in my mid-30s, and people from the diaspora, from France, mm-hmm. The United States, Canada,
right.
They all came to Haiti to try and rebuild it.
Right.
So it was really an exciting time. So I have no regrets about my time in Haiti. It actually made me understand
mm-hmm.
Haitian culture and Haitian people better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this will probably knock people out in the Bahamas who've never been to Haiti, that we are so much more alike than you'd think. Right? We're not that different. For example, when I would go into, I lived in Pétionville, so I'd go down to the Port-au-Prince, and I'd see people, myself, I'd see myself coming and going.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And at the time, Fritz Longchamp was the foreign minister, right?
Right.
And he and I had a fairly good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he came up to me and says, Julian, just tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know you're Haitian. Vous êtes Haitien. Tu es Haitien.
Mm-hmm.
You know the truth. And so we had a good laugh about it. But I had a really good time in Haiti and enjoyed the food, enjoyed the places. Going up to Kenskoff,
mm-hmm.
what an experience, you know?
That's like a mountain.
It's the highest, one of the highest points.
Right.
You're literally driving in a cloud. Amazing. But getting back to the visa thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I stayed in the embassy for a while. And when you wake up, there are already hundreds of people outside there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Waiting to be served.
Right.
And you try to get through all of them in a day. At the time, it was just myself and my boss, chargé d'affaires at the time,
mm-hmm.
Sally Moss. And, you know, she really was an incredible person to work with. And we were committed to doing the best for both the Bahamas and for the people we served in Haiti as well. But we traveled throughout. We went into Lambé. We went into Port-de-Paix and, of course, Ocap.
Mm-hmm.
And we found how people were being taken advantage of. Some people in Lambé gave their, Port-de-Paix rather, gave their entire life savings to someone who told them, I've got jobs for you in the Bahamas. We'll take care of you.
Yeah, that always happened.
Gave them money and nothing happened. Man just disappeared.
Right.
You know? It's sad. It's sad, you know?
That always happen, and it's unfortunate that I would say in the Haitian community myself, I've seen a lot of those things taking place where persons are being, you know, taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. Where, because, you know, you living in a country where if somebody said, hey, I have a better opportunity for you, and you wanted to get out because you're not comfortable, so when that happens, you jump on it.
Yeah.
You know. And so for you to, and oh my God.
But it gives you such a different perspective, for example, dealing with the people who came, you know, and you felt like you had to try and see all of them if you could.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of them came from miles, some of them came from CAP to actually get a visa application that day. And they're going through all kinds of things because, you know, they're coming on buses and you're dealing with Zenglendo,
mm-hmm.
who would, you know, just stop the bus, get on there and rob them all.
Right.
So really coming to get a visa in Haiti was, for many Haitian nationals, was a real adventure and a treacherous one at times.
Mm-hmm. I had two experiences, I would say, where somebody had told me that they give, you know, persons money to do such and such thing for them. And they took the money.
Yeah, no, it's unsuspecting people who really are just hoping to better their lives, mm-hmm. and better their lives for their families. And, you know, and those are the ones you feel, you know, more for.
Yeah, because they risk so much. They risk so much. Like, they fight, they work, and they risk a lot just for a better life because Haiti is, you know, at times we have high hopes for Haiti, and we would think that Haiti would be at its peak and would get better. And again, they disappointed because nobody wants to leave their country.
Yeah. I'll give you a joke about this because I speak fluent French,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't speak Creole at all when I went to Haiti. And I had this in my mind that I wouldn't speak Creole either.
Mm-hmm.
But I had an assistant who was Haitian, and she would interview everyone in Creole. Now, I had some standards that I was not going to... Well, you know, you always have to have some room, right?
Mm-hmm.
But really, those standards were quite strict. And for example, if you overstayed mm-hmm. by 6 weeks or any amount of time, I'm going to tell you straight up now, you can't come back to see me for at least another 6 months.
Right.
Just to make sure that when they go, I have no problem giving you a visa to go to Haiti. And I should tell Bahamians this, the majority of people we dealt with
mm-hmm.
were legitimate business people. They came into Haiti, they came into the Bahamas, did what they had to do, and came back. Right. And those people never had a problem getting another visa.
Right.
But those who overstayed, don't come back for 6 months.
No.
And they weren't mad at me, but they got mad at my assistant
mm-hmm.
because they thought that, because I didn't speak Creole at the time, mm-hmm. they thought she wasn't telling me the facts. So I had to learn Creole in order to have their trust
right.
and faith, because if they didn't, well, then they wouldn't abide by the rules, would they?
Yeah, and it's, you know, I would say when it comes to Haitians, right, sometimes they feel so, even if they're in a foreign country, they feel so left out. And I would say in a sense where they feel so lonely. So the minute you, at times, I'm like, hey, today I'm not speaking Creole. And I have this thing with my parents, right? Mm-hmm. And because you want them to always learn to speak English better. And the only way to learn that is to continue speaking English with them.
So the
more you speak Creole, I act like sometimes I don't understand Creole. I'm like, hello, what did you say?
I don't understand.
So I get my parents to speak Creole, and that is why they are so fluent in speaking English.
Yeah. And listen,
it worked.
That is a real advantage to have more than one language.
And it worked all the time.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, at the point, I got to a point where my Creole really was quite good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was really quite proud of that. Because Creole is a fun language. It's easy as well. If you speak French, you have to think differently, because if you speak French, you don't necessarily speak Creole. Mm-hmm. But it's the only three tenses, and the tense changes by one little word, so a really easy and fun language.
Can you tell me a little bit of your Creole? Ooh. Speak a little bit for me.
Oh, Lord, I ain't ever get this one.
My listeners would be, oh wow, Nutande, are you guys listening? Come on, I say, Nutande, Julian Kapalikoyo.
It's a long time.
Oh my God, Julian is speaking Creole. I love it.
Remain Haiti, eh? Haiti do. That's what every, that is two words, two phrases you always heard in Haiti. Haiti do. La vie est dure. Those two things. For those who don't speak Creole, it means that Haiti is sweet. And it is. There's nothing like, you know, when you're traveling, you're approaching Haiti, you're coming to Port-au-Prince through the mountains.
Right.
And you're about to land. It's really a wonderful experience. But the second phrase is, life is hard. And everywhere you went in Haiti,
Your experience in Haiti, I would say, what was it like? Because you said you was there for 2 years.
It was fascinating.
Right. Because you sound like you had the best of Haiti.
Well, myself, and I left someone else out there who may have had an even better time than I did. That was Nedley Martinborough, who was our Defense Force attaché. But he, myself, and Sally Moss, we understood it. We all appreciated what we were doing.
Have you ever had any bad experience whilst you were in Haiti for the 2 years stationed there?
I guess it was a bad experience, but it wasn't that bad because I'm here. One of our men who worked there, his name was Amos. I can't remember Amos's last name, but anyway, let me put it like this. Sally Moss, the chargé, had gone to Nassau, and Nedley was going to Nassau too, so I was the only officer there. And we came into the embassy, which was at Place Boyer at the time, and we had, so Nedley picked up some stuff to take back to Nassau, and I was in and out of the embassy two or three times. This is on a Saturday. I come to work Monday morning, I'm starting to deal with visa issues, and Amos comes up to me and says, Mr. Reed, game problem. I said, what's that? He says, five armed men came looking for you on Saturday. I say, looking for me? Now, I couldn't understand it at all. But on that Friday, the day before, this guy tried to get a visa. He was very drunk, and I didn't accept the visa. And the practice in, and I'm sure it's still the practice now, is if you are denying a visa and you don't want to really put a permanent record, you just put a stamp saying seen. So the application was seen. Anyway, that must have or may have caused him to get irate because, well, it did, because he tried to drive his vehicle through the gates.
What?
Unsuccessfully. Anyway, so now I'm hearing this. And so I'm like, I spoke to Director General, I think the PS at the time was Joshua Sayers, and Janet Bostwick was the Minister of Foreign Affairs, so I had a few conversations with them. And I spoke to my father, Idris Reed, who is also a former head of the Foreign Service, a permanent secretary for Foreign Affairs. And, you know, I decided that, you know, I didn't think that really my life was in danger. But so what we did, and PNH, the Haitian National Police, had just been formed, and they assigned someone to me 24 hours.
Wow.
And all we did was change directions and times that I would move for about 2 weeks. And to tell you the truth, because I was in my mid-30s, I guess, it was more like an adventure than than anything else. Because, you know, I figured, you know, come on, if they wanted me dead, they would have done it.
Yeah, they would have done it. They would have done it. So, and at that time, what was his problem with you?
I didn't give him the visa. And I think, from what I understand, that I put the stamp in his passport. He didn't like that. So it wasn't a visa stamp. It just said seen at the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Embassy. But that was common practice.
Oh, Lord. That's... Oh, wow. You wanted that visa so bad, but that wasn't the right way to go.
And trust me, and I can say this, if I were not an honest man, I've had so many opportunities to receive money, big money, just to see someone, to interview someone. And if they got a visa, get even more than that, but I couldn't live with that. And, you know, not just with my luck, I ought to get caught anyway.
Right. So,
but
that's
no,
right.
I couldn't do that.
Yeah, it only lasts for so long. There remember you that, you know. And it's good to be genuine in everything
you
that you do.
You have to.
And
you
honest, especially when people put you there and they look up to you and they trust your soul.
And the thing is, what I would do is I tell, you know, I was fair to people. I said, look, ordinarily you can go, but this is what you have to do in order to get the visa. Now, until you do this, I can't issue you a visa.
Right.
And they appreciated that. You know, they appreciated that.
That's great. I wish a lot of people would be like that, but no. I guess when it comes to when it comes to those things, I can't even comment. But it's good to be honest. It's good to be honest. It pays off at the end of the day because
I may have many faults, but I'm incorruptible.
That's right. You are definitely incorruptible. If you were today, you would not have been here because you see what's happening with the people who are corrupt. They are getting catch. All the time. So, community, I sent to all of those who are listening. Oh, you are tuned in to Guardian 96.9 FM with Let's Talk Together. I'm Dade. I'm your host, Lady T. I'm here with my guest, Julian Reed. We will be right back after this break. Community, I sent. Pas touché, bouton, appuie tout net. Après, c'est comme ça. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Let's Talk Together. Indeed, I'm your host, Lady T. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And there's, you know, we're celebrating Christmas. We're celebrating the birth of Christ. I would hope that everybody would change their ways to be a little bit more, how about I say that?
Be good to
giving.
One another.
Yeah, a little bit more giving and being good to one another and holding somebody's hands that needs it because you never imagine what people are going through. I was watching something where they said a 22-year-old
killed himself.
So somebody's always in need of help. Sometimes it might don't have to be money. It can just be of you.
Talk to them.
Hey, how are you? How's things going? You know, how can I assist? But you have persons sorry, I'm here with my guest, Julian Reed. I'm getting a little bit carried away,
No,
I get so touchy when I hear those kind of things because we are definitely losing our young men in society.
Yes.
We're not only using them by gun violence, but also those sorts of things are happening.
Suicide is really, really out of control.
Out of control in this country.
Not just men, young women are killing
young
themselves.
Young women
too.
Also are killing themselves.
It's just, I don't know, I guess people feel like there's no one they can trust, but there are people that
organizations and sometimes family members, even some of the family members, we have to make ourselves more you know, where persons can reach out to us, where they can say they can trust us, because sometimes we tend to put so much in our work that we forget our family members.
True.
So we have to be more reachable where they can reach us and just say, hey, because sometimes you might want to talk to somebody. Hey, Julian, I'm trying to reach you. And you don't know what the person is calling you for.
Mm-hmm.
You never even called them back.
Talk to them.
Yeah, they're probably calling me for money. And I'm this Christmas time,
yeah,
I'm not into that, you know.
Yeah.
And you never know. Just listening to them, you could have saved their lives.
That's true.
Literally. So let's try and be more open to each other and see if we can be more helpful because this is the time to assist. And it's really saddened me when I see those kind of things. We're losing too much of our young men, but like Julian said, plenty of our women as well, but we are lack of young men in this society.
Yeah, the plight
especially
of the
our
young
youths.
Baby man is frightening, really.
Yeah, they are the future of this great country.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the professor who was here last week, he was talking about Haiti, and he said he's starting from the root, because if we don't attack it from the root, how are we gonna fix the problem?
And you gotta find out what the root is first.
Yeah. So but when he said that, he's mentioned that he's starting from the children, you know,
yeah,
because
you have to
are the generation.
Instill love into everyone, you know. That's the only way.
Because I'm, you know, Julian, just to go back to that, I'm thinking to myself, what could somebody have been thinking about or going through to do such thing? But again,
don't forget the 8-year-old boy who killed himself.
Yeah.
Which is still incredible to me.
I know, right? You know, it feels like I'm watching. Definitely, when I saw that, I'm like, "Is this happening in the Bahamas?" Because I had to literally read that over. I'm said, "Where is this happening?"
Yeah, you know, and
because those kind of things happen.
Very good student, did well in school, right? And, you know,
or even a movie. I'm like, "Was this real?"
Yeah,
because you're still trying to figure out, is this something like that would be real, mm-hmm, for an 8-year-old boy to kill himself, and then we have a 22-year-old boy that jump off in Bozeen Town, yeah, on a cliff.
Off a cliff.
Off a cliff, you know?
I read the police report. I couldn't believe it.
Right. So I'm thinking to myself, what was going through his mind? Yeah. Again, we could never say, because we don't know. What I can handle, somebody else might not be able to handle. True. And we also have to learn to have, when you have God's grace, which is very important, you surpass almost everything. It helps you to understand more. True. And it helps you to be better, you know, be a better version of yourself.
Which is what we should all try to be.
Right. So you have a little bit more faith in the turnaround of your life, because at times you're like, oh, okay, well, this is Christmas time. I may not have no money and no family to call, nobody to come. I don't know where I'm going to eat. I don't know where a dollar is going to come from. A 22-year-old, I don't know if he had any kids. So, you know, you're thinking about all of that, but no sense of hope. So you're saying they're not, is nothing that they're holding on to.
It's I don't know how we're going to.
It's incredibly traumatized.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, no, I can't even begin to imagine to do something like that.
But we also have to be careful how we speak to each other. You know?
Yes.
I think, because, you know, I might be able to take some licks, but you mightn't be able to.
That's true.
So it's very important to be courteous to people as much as possible.
Yes, and be more vulnerable to people.
Sensitive, yeah.
Yes, because we can't just wrap up our lives and forget our loved ones and forget the people that needs us. A little conversation can go a long way. That's all it is. Yeah. Let's stay to be positive.
Kindness.
Yes, a little kindness can go a long way.
Like you, every time I see you, you're always very kind.
Yeah.
And I know that sometimes is a little rough.
Yeah.
But you're always very kind.
Yeah. And we that's a part of, you know, being hopeful and having faith. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you feel like, hey, you may be feeling overwhelmed, but you know that there is a God who in him there is hope and faith that he's going to make a way. You know, you may not see the part today, but definitely he's opening a new door for you. Mm-hmm. So when you don't have that, because, you know, the devil is very busy, especially around this time. He's busy while we're celebrating the birth of Jesus. He's extra busy now.
Oh, yeah. You saw what happened in Germany last time?
No, I didn't. What happened?
A 50-year-old Arab doctor, Saudi Arabian doctor, drove his car into a Christmas market, injured 50 people, killed at least 2.
Oh, my God.
Including a young child.
It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Coming through, probably was on some kind of drugs.
No, they're not absolutely sure what it is yet. But
a similar
thing happened. No, they don't. They're stopping short of saying it's a terror issue at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But a similar event happened about 8 years ago to the date. So they're looking at it. But they have the man in custody. Doesn't bring back those 2 lives, but there could be more fatalities because a lot of people were really injured, seriously injured.
You said in Germany?
Mm-hmm, a place called Magdeburg.
Oh, wow. And
apparently it's in the middle of Germany.
That's one place I would love to visit. That's one of my traveling places.
I've been
Germany.
Fortunate to go to
you,
Germany.
You did? Uh-huh. How many countries did you actually visit, Julian?
When you're based in the UK as a Bahamian diplomat, and there are more countries now, but when I was there, we were accredited to France, so I was in France a lot.
Right.
We were accredited to Germany, Belgium, Italy, and then I was fortunate enough to be doing work with UNEP on the Biological Diversity Convention, thanks to, I have to say, Maria Teresa Butler, who was a PS at the time, who told me, you're going to Spain, and Dr. Donald Cooper, who really was the scientific head at the time on the Biological Diversity Convention, and that took me into Kenya several times.
Mm-hmm.
So Kenya, Senegal, and Senegal I went to the island called Gorée, which is where the point of no return was, where they took the slaves from to bring them into the new world. It was a really emotional experience for everyone who went there. Yeah.
What happened?
Well, because when the actual tour guide described how the sharks were just there waiting, they didn't have to move because people would be thrown overboard or...
Really?
Oh, it was terrible,
sounds
yeah.
Sounds like a nightmare.
It was. Yeah, but it was. It was the beginning of slavery for them. It was a nightmare. Yeah, it was.
Wow.
It was.
You've had a lot of experience. I guess being in the foreign affairs...
that's what did it. But Germany, I went to Bonn, which is the actual capital.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, a lot of people are there. But my experience, the favorite place I went to was a place called Coburg, where they actually make these little figurines, you know, the little Goebel figurines, they make them there. And we were there for Oktoberfest, and it was just so cool to have a genuine German Oktoberfest experience.
Wow. But you can't even count how many countries you visited. Would it be about 30, 40?
Oh, I don't know if it's that many, actually.
No, maybe 28.
I've been to fewer than I'd like to go to. I haven't been to Brazil yet.
Brazil. Well, my friend, the professor, he was at Brazil a few weeks ago. And when something happened with the prime minister, the president of...
Yeah, he had a brain bleed. Lula. Yes, he had a brain bleed. I think he's recuperating quite well now.
Okay, that's awesome. Good to know. Okay, Julian, so I'm going to ask you a little thing because, you know, you've been in Haiti for, like you said, you had the privilege of being in Haiti, living in Haiti for 2 years. So I'm going to ask you, do you feel like the international leaders are doing enough in terms of assisting Haiti?
That's an interesting question. You can't answer that straight off. I think they realize that their efforts have to be greater now. I hate to say it like this. There's never a time when there isn't violence in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I remember I lived up in Montagnoir. And every night, and I call it, I was serenaded by gunshots
right.
going off. And then you could look on Plain and you could see ties being burned and everything like that. But I think it's even more crucial now. But you have to remember that really it's the international community that has contributed greatly to what's going on in Haiti today. Goes back years, but those countries have a lot to... of a responsibility to take for what's happening in Haiti in many ways. But what's happening now, we're trying again. You know, I'll tell you, like when I was in Haiti, and I was there at a time I thought was very positive and good things were happening. And all of a sudden things just switched. When I was in Haiti, the lights either went off every 5 hours, every 3 hours, whatever, or they went off for like 24 hours nonstop, so you couldn't live without a generator. You know, I was teasing people. I mean, of course, it's getting better here now, but I was saying, you know, my life in Haiti in the 90s was preparing me for the blackouts in the Bahamas. But the French gave, I think, $80 million for restoration of electricity, improvement of electricity. And things got better for a minute, then they got worse.
Right.
And then there was some talk about, oh, the wrong kind of generators were born, the wrong kind of turbines. Obviously, there was corruption and someone stole the money. You know?
Wow.
And that's the thing. Dealing with the corruption in Haiti, that's the first time I heard, because there's a special name for corruption in Haiti, soudoyer, to put money under the table, soudoyer.
Soudoyer.
And you had to have soudoyer accounts, because if you didn't, your lights wouldn't be turned on or your water. So, you know, so it's going to be a long process. But the problem is, the main thing is you cannot give up on Haiti.
Right.
You know, we're all affected. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when the Trump administration gets in next month and how they look at Haiti. I can't comment on that at this time, but... obviously, it's going to be a very different approach. I would think.
It will be. I had Professor Maki Jean-Pierre. He was my guest for last week.
He's at UB?
Yeah, he's a professor at UB. So he went to a seminar in Brazil.
Okay.
So he had the privilege of meeting, well, where they were at a site where they went to visit, where, you know, where they used to keep the slaves. The African slaves.
The ones that came from, when they arrived.
Yeah. So he said he had the privilege
this
of
This was
seeing,
in Bahia or?
I don't remember the name of the place where he was, but he told me, and he said he had the privilege of meeting the French president.
Macron.
Emmanuel Macron. And he asked him about, you know, the situation in Haiti, the youths and so on and so forth. This was on the 21st of November. He actually made headlines all around the world. In Brazil, in Canada, Haiti even sent a letter to France asking them, what are you saying? You know, we literally had to pay you guys.
France is one of the countries that's responsible for the state that Haiti is in now, so at least in great part, maybe not completely.
Right, so I was following that. I'm like, what? When I followed that immediately, and I had to invite him to the show because a lot of persons here in the Bahamas, I don't think they were aware of what was going on around the world. But because I have this news thing set up on my phone where whatever happening, I go and I read the news. So I had the privilege of reading the news. I'm like, so his I'm going to send it to you, Julian Reid. So when he asked him, he said, you know, how can we help? Because, you know, this is actually in French. This is what's in Canada. But I translated in English.
Okay.
And so he said, Haitians are completely stupid and have killed Haiti. And for that response, he was criticized around the world,
We will say that there are a lot of elements in Haiti that have made the situation worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about those 10 families.
Mm-hmm.
You know the families I'm talking about.
Of course.
Who really have not made Haiti what it should be. I'll tell you, the thing that bothered me the most, I guess, in Haiti, I had a friend, and they had, they were a wealthy family. And I went to dinner, and he said, would you like, of course, you know, they have great babankou domaine.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, would you like a glass of domaine? And I said, of course, yes. All right. And he rang this little bell. And this man came running, right? And that in itself was one thing. By the way, they dressed up in black tie for dinner every night.
Wow.
But that wasn't the problem. The problem is when he started telling me that this man who was a grown man in his early 20s, was mm-hmm. born on their compound and has been working for them ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Restavec.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't go back to that house because it really bothered me, because really it was nothing but modern day slavery to me. You were asking me something else. You were asking me about Macron. We were talking about.
Right, we were talking about President Macron.
Yeah, so what
Macron.
I was saying is that yes, there are a lot of Haitian people who have caused the, you know, they can't be free from blame. You can't blame it just on the international community. But France, and I think the problem, I'm not trying to sort of take up for Macron, but he is having such incredible problems himself with France. you see that they just got rid of his prime minister. He has to get a new one. I think he did. But France is in a very bad state right now, too.
Mm.
So I think he may have been just a little frustrated with internal matters in his own country when he said that. I don't know.
Because if you watch the video, because I saw the video, and the professor was being so, you know, determined for him to answer the question. And I guess too, it was, you know,
when you push enough, you might get
that. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, you probably got an answer that came from the heart, because that's probably how you really feel mm-hmm. about Haiti. But why interfere with the country?
Well,
why interfere so much in a negative way? I'm not going to say in a positive way, in a negative way, when it comes to Haiti's politics.
Particularly when Haiti was forced to pay back France after the
Haiti,
the revolution.
Billions of dollars.
That should never have happened.
Never.
Yeah.
And it was them that brought Haiti to the ground.
Mm.
Because you can imagine that money was for Haiti to develop its country develop itself.
Yeah, but subsequent leaders have really not helped either, you know. Although, you know what I always got when I was in Haiti? And when I was there, Préval and Préval was the president, right?
Mm-hmm.
I subsequently met Aristide in different meetings and spoke with him at length. But really, when I was there, people said
Préval,
as bad as the Duvalier mm-hmm. regime may have been,
mm-hmm.
people had food. people could function a little bit better.
Right.
Many people said that, not all. You know, and that's the next thing. You know, Haiti grows everything. Haiti grows rice. Haiti grows this, grows that. There's no reason why Haiti is not a poor country as far as resources is concerned.
No, it's because the people are using it.
Yeah.
They're not pumping anything into Haiti, helping Haiti with anything, because at one point, Haiti used to sell rice to United States.
Yeah.
But now, United States could come in and they go and they do what they please. So, there is no law.
And every fruit you could imagine,
mm-hmm.
mangoes year-round, you eat mangoes until you're sick.
Mm-hmm.
Kashima, or sugar apple, as they call it, or every mm-hmm. you know, everything grows in Haiti,
because
and grows
it has
in abundance.
Such a rich soil.
Yes.
Such a rich soil, yes. Even up to coffee. As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask my dad to bring me some good coffee from Haiti.
Haitian coffee,
he said he's going there soon to visit. I'm going to ask him to get me some coffee when he goes.
Your dad's going to visit now?
He's going to visit. Well, you know,
he's going up north.
Yeah, he's going to. Yeah,
you don't want to be in the Port-au-Prince.
No, not Port-au-Prince. And persons are not. The problem is just Port-au-Prince.
Yeah, it's not really.
It's not Cape. You can go to Haiti now. Cape. As a matter of fact, I check. Satama, it's a hotel that's in Cape Haiti, because I'm planning on going to for the new year, if God spare my life.
Patient,
yeah, so I wanted to go to Satama. Satama is so beautiful. I'm like, wow, the country is, oh my God, breathtaking. And I'm looking at the hotel, what's on top of the mountain. I'm like, how the hell am I going to get there? But anyhow, they probably know, right?
Mont-Christophe?
It's probably almost there.
Uh-huh.
And what? I'm like, really? So, and Cape Haiti right now, it is good to go. There is no problem. You can go to Cape Haiti, you can go to Port-au-Prince, but most persons want to go to Cape Haiti because they don't want to go way to Port-au-Prince.
Yeah.
But if you go to OCAP, which is Cape Haiti, OCAP, no problems.
Yeah,
none whatsoever. The airport, everything is functioning great. Nothing. I've had two of my friends would went there on Tuesday, and because you know Bahamas Air goes there every Tuesdays and Saturdays, so they went there on Tuesday. They said they're gone for 2 weeks. So there's no problem, and they stay at Satama. Satama is a beautiful hotel, and I pray that's where I go. That's where I'm gonna go stay whenever I go there, but not Port-au-Prince, because you know Port-au-Prince is the capital. Everything is actually happening in Port-au-Prince. When my guest was here, he said Port-au-Prince was not built to have 2-3 million of people. It was only built to have 500,000. And because the other persons that are coming from the different areas, you know, let's say we have the 700 islands, but this is our capital here. This is actually our capital.
Right. Yeah.
But
which is probably is overpopulated.
Right.
The way it is.
That is true. But if we was not putting into the other islands, everybody from the islands would have had to been living here.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where would have we hold all of the people?
Well, you know,
it wasn't built like that. So it's the same thing that's happening to Port-au-Prince, because they not putting anything or not investing in the children. So the children are leaving, you know, let's say Andras, Eleuthera, and Abaco to come
into Port-au-Prince,
to come to New Providence right here. So it's the same thing as Port-au-Prince. And when they go to Port-au-Prince, you know, they didn't have no education from where they was on that island.
So what are they going to do?
What are they going to do? Gun violence. So it's them that's bringing it to Port-au-Prince, because when they go there, they go to Port-au-Prince with no sorts of education. Remember, Port-au-Prince is the city. So the majority of people who's from Port-au-Prince are rich and intelligent people. They literally only speak French.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when you have somebody that's in Nassau and they speak in French to you, you have to know, oh my God, they're from Port-au-Prince. They're not from the other parts, because they don't know how to speak no French.
Yeah, it's strictly Creole, isn't it?
Yeah, it's strictly Creole. So French, again, it's just for the elites and the wealthies and the more educated ones. That's what French is for. And people don't get that. It's not, it is a broken, they said it's a broken Creole. It's too.
It's a different language.
It's a different language altogether.
You can't, no, it's a different
language. It's a different language altogether.
Bits and pieces, but you have to, Yeah.
French is for the smart people.
If I go back to Haiti now for like a day or two, by day three, I'll be able to speak Creole properly again.
Right.
It'll come back, but it's not the same as
French. No, it's not the same as French. French is not for everybody. It's for the people who went to school, who are well-educated, the elites, the ones that could afford the education to be taught French. Mm-hmm. That's what French was for. And he made a valid point. He said, because, again, where they are from, they don't have no schools there, no proper systems in place. So everybody is leaving to go to Port-au-Prince, the city, because they want a better life.
Yeah.
You know,
and you can't blame people for
you
that.
No, you cannot blame people for going to the city to search for a better life. So it's the same as the people leaving from Haiti to come to the Bahamas for a better life. But I'm always going to be real with you, Julian. When you do come here the right way, the proper way.
Well,
yeah, that's
you know, I say the same thing, right? Some Bahamians may not want to hear this, but we have so many Bahamians who are going into the United States and Canada not the right way.
Yeah.
So that's the same thing. You may have the problem with Haitians that come here the wrong way.
But can
way.
You
so
imagine,
so you should go the right way yourself.
Isn't that something else? Yeah. My friend told me the other day, said, I'm trying to talk to my nephew right now to come back from the United States. Because he left here and he went to the United States. I'm like, your nephew left the Bahamas? He said, yes, he left here, went to the United States for a better life, because he said, you know, he's not getting paid enough here, nothing is working. So we've had a lot of Bahamians doing that on and on, leaving to go to Canada, you know, leaving to the United States.
Well, Canada's getting hip to people who are not all right, you know. But it'll be very interesting to see what happens if Donald Trump does what he says and changes the immigration laws. Because right now, if you're born in the United States, you're American. But he's looking at changing that. That if you're born in the United States, you're not automatically American. The Brits did it.
Right.
I think in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
Well,
we know Bahamians go to America all the time to have their babies.
To have their kids, and they come back. So, Tetsun, everybody, you know, sometimes you may be somewhere and you feel like, you know, you want a different experience. You want a better life, a better opportunity, and you want to go, okay, we're going to get right back to this. You are still tuned in to Guardian 96.9 FM with Let's Talk Together.
I'm having fun in this conversation.
Yeah, we are.
I see Wally yawning.
Yeah, my producer is tired, eh? This is Christmas, and you've been shopping too much for the Christmas. I hope my name was on the list, but he's been shopping a lot, so he's tired, eh? Okay, we will be right back after this break. Welcome back to Guardian 96.9 FM with Fresh News, Smart Talk. Indeed, I'm your host, Lady T. Welcome back to Let's Talk Together. Community Aïsien, pour moun yo ki fè un branché, bienvenue à Guardian 96.9 FM avec émission An Nou Parle Ensemble. Mwen genye la avec moi qui se guest mwen, Julian Reed. Nou konnen Julian Reed, nte di nou se yon gwo journaliste nan peyi Naso, and we are talking a little bit about politics, a little bit about Haiti. We're just having a great time at the radio this evening, and I am enjoying it myself, Julian. So, Julian, I'm gonna always say this. Do you feel like there is hope for Haiti?
You know, you always have to have hope.
Yeah,
You can't give up on that. No, you can't give up on hope.
No, you cannot.
There's too much for Haiti to offer the world, really. And not just from its natural resources, from its culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get amazing artists, amazing writers, amazing musicians. There's so much culturally that Haiti has to offer the world. And so that has to be nurtured.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have hope for Haiti. And, you know, you don't want to see a people, an entire people, lose their country.
That's true.
You know, so the international community has to do what it needs to do. CARICOM, I believe, has the right approach, saying that, look, you have to let Haitians do it the way they feel.
Oh, CARICOM said that?
Oh, all the time. It has to be led. Whatever happens has to be led by the Haitian people. Because all of the other situations that have happened before that have been led by foreigners have failed.
Yes, and I am happy to know that CARICOM has been able to take that approach.
That is their approach. That's it has to be Haitian led.
Yeah.
Now, there's always a one step forward, two step back thing with Haiti, because the last interim prime minister. Well, they kicked him out.
The
new council, Gary Kony.
Mm-hmm.
He got kicked out. I can't remember. Oh, it's, who is it now? It's
I can't
remember his name.
Me either. But I know who's there now. Oh, I'm going to find his name.
Let's see if he lasts.
Because
don't forget now, 2026 is when elections have to be held by.
Mm-hmm.
February of 2026. So I think if you can get that much stability to get to free and fair elections.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a remarkable achievement for Haiti for today. I don't want to wish violence on it, but obviously there's going to be increased violence, particularly around that time.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully things will calm down, right? And the Haitian people can, be proud of saying, hey, this is our country, and look how great democracy is moving here. Mm-hmm. I believe it will happen one day. It's
who's
just
there now? Sorry, hold that.
I can't remember
it's
his name.
Didier Fils-Aimé.
Fils-Aimé.
That's who's there now.
Yes.
So I had to remember. I can't remember. But I had to make sure I got that right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's who's there now. So I'm hoping that he's gonna work along with the, I would say the police.
Well, the Kenyan police are there. I don't know how much longer they're gonna be there. But they're there now. They're leading everything there. But I think 600 to maybe 1,000 now. Then we have some Bahamians there. There's a CARICOM force there. The mm-hmm. Bahamians are part of it. More Bahamians will be going in, I believe, 150.
And, but Haiti, but why are they? I just don't get it. Haiti has its own army that's ready, right? Do you know that? Haiti never asked, from something that I read, they never ask for the CARICOM help. They simply ask for them to help them.
But hold on, though. The former prime minister did.
By helping them to have more, weapons and attacking, maybe to form their, because, they have their own, how would I say that again? They have their own army.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, do you think that the best thing is for everyone in the international community to pull out and just let...
Well,
let fighting go on until they
sort
it out?
No,
there has to be some international
support. Right, right. I feel as if Haiti has their own army that's ready to take place, the army should lead with whoever that they send. Why not let them have their army to lead? But they don't want Haiti army to be forced. Why? It has to be a reason. But again,
I don't know. From what I'm getting... I don't know, and I could be wrong too. It seems like PNH, the Haitian National Police, which is the actual entity that's actually being more involved now, seems to be working fairly well with the Kenyans.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what I'm getting. So I don't know, maybe this might be the beginning of a handover.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole thing is that they want to see elections held first, free and fairly, and then a handover. It'd be interesting. I probably need to have an audience with Mr. Christie, Perry Christie, who is part of the special CARICOM team,
mm-hmm.
And see what they're saying.
Yeah, see what's going on. Because, when you have the inside information, it is always accurate, mm-hmm. So all we can do now is guess and hope that things work out for Haiti. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing, because Haiti, it's a great country.
It's the first
black country to be independent, mm-hmm. and Haiti independence is coming up on the 1st of January. Right. Every 1st of January is the independence.
And I'm sure that what happened in Haiti inspired people like Pompey in and Kate, poor black Kate in the Bahamas, to say we could do it too. I mean, the news probably took a long time to get to them,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure that helped, even though there was always a rebellion spirit, because don't forget, African people were free people before they became enslaved.
That's true.
Their own culture, their own language,
mm-hmm.
and everything else. So the fact that black people have survived throughout all of that is an amazing thing to begin with.
Mm-hmm. I'm just hoping that it can bring some sorts of change in Haiti. But I had this journalist who was on the show, Pascal Floistel, a few Sundays ago. He told me that where he was at, Akaye, that the roads were closed. That's just right outside of Port-au-Prince. Mm-hmm. And he said it wasn't far from Port-au-Prince. He said the roads were closed. And if persons want to go across the border or, you know, go to even go anywhere, they have to ask the gang members for permission. So, in other words, the gang members were in control of that part. And I'm wondering, when is Kenya... Another person is not going to reach there.
I don't know exactly where they are exactly, but you know, they actually, I think they shot dead like 100 gang members the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are thousands.
Yeah.
But I guess they're making a dent somewhere. It's sad that there has to be bloodshed that people can't talk and come to some kind of agreement. But I guess this is what has to happen in order to get to that point.
That's true.
Hopefully they'll get tired of the carnage.
I just feel like the United States should just, you know, whilst they know where the gang members is, they should just
get a bomb and bomb up the whole place where the gang members are.
You all I would say is
well-known names, but you never know what the idea of the next administration is.
Yeah, that's true. I would hope that would be the approach that they take, and to spare everybody and send everybody home, even our own troops and Kenya and other places, you know, from the Caribbean, to come home and get out of Haiti where this situation can be under control. That's my only thing. I'm praying that they would do what me and you thinking, eh? Because... in reality, that's the best thing to do.
Well, I don't know. Some people may not agree with that, but I don't know. I really don't know what to say about that.
But it'll be interesting to see what
the approach of the next administration in the U.S. is toward Haiti.
Okay. What do you think about us here in the Bahamas under the PLP government? How do you think they're performing?
Well, I think the Progressive Liberal Party is doing some... amazing things, particularly for the long-term benefit of the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how much Bahamians appreciate it,
mm-hmm.
Because Bahamians, like, if when you walk into the food store and things are overly expensive, mm-hmm. those are the things they focus on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the light bills.
Which are going down, actually. The light bills have gone down.
Yes, that's true.
But you never know what...
I guess my prayers has been answered.
What causes a person to look at an administration in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of the things that the government has done is going to put us in a good stead for the future.
I believe so, too.
And if there is any change in government, hopefully the next government would keep those things that are good.
And the election is in 2026, rewriting everything, right?
Yeah, 2 years ago. Well, yeah. A year and a half left.
What do you think about the FNM? Do you think they've, you know, moving forward when it comes to... You know what? That's not the proper question to ask. I think I'm going to ask you that question when we off air, because I just catch myself. I'm not going to get too deep into politics, because that's something that's not my thing. I think that question would have been a little bit overwhelmed. So I'm going to leave that question. But what I wanted to say is that I feel like the Progressive Liberal Party is doing a good job under the PLP. This government is doing a good job, but to eat its own. Everybody has their own opinions again. So it's up to them, but I don't know. All we can do is pray and put the country first and see what's best for the country. But from my perspective, and you know, looking at them, I feel like they're doing a good job.
I want to change the conversation a little bit and get back to Haiti and talk about something that I always found really quite precious and special.
Really?
I'll never forget when I came home for Christmas the first year there. And that would have been, I guess, Christmas of 97. And every Christmas afterwards, you get on that American Airlines. And there, there used to be like three big jets flying out of Port-au-Prince to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And you would see, I saw these people coming on with these little houses that were so cute. They had like candles in them that lit up at night. I think mm-hmm. they call them fanel.
Right.
Is it fanel? Is that the right word?
I am not even sure of the
You don't know what I mean?
No.
They're like little house. They're like little small houses they construct, and they put candles in them and they put them on trees. They're beautiful.
What?
Yeah. If somebody knew I could get one now, I would have one on my Christmas tree.
Oh, Julian, you've had such...
No, seriously though, but people on the planes, they were carrying them to Florida and everything.
Really?
I think they call it fanel, yeah. I have a picture somewhere, I'm not sure.
That might be the word for it.
I just thought they were so amazing. An interesting part of...
I'm just happy to know that your experience, during the time that you stayed in Haiti was a good one. That's the most important thing.
I've been, since I left there, I went back twice. I went back, like I said, for the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back once again on a business trip.
Mm-hmm.
Haiti's an amazing place. And, you know, I've never really, really felt, in spite of having that death threat, as I put it,
mm-hmm.
Never really felt unsafe in Haiti. Never felt unsafe.
That's good. It's good to know. And you were going to tell me the Creole word that you know, the little bit of Creole. I'm still waiting on
that. I spoke three. Well, I said two words to you just
now. It was the only thing?
You know something, though? No. It's just that it's gone. I guess if I had to interview you for a visa, it would come back more quickly.
Julian, the word I'm going to teach you today is ukapab.
Oh, you can do it.
Oh, wow. Wally, did you hear that? I didn't even...
When kapab fetsao. Vremo.
I told you, Julian, you're really speaking Creole. You undercover here. I thought I was teaching you a word. You already know it. No. Well, anyhow, the word for today is you can do it. In Creole, ukapab. Ukapab in Creole, okay? You can do it. Please, let's hold on to our little faith. Hold on to our hope. Remember, this country is indeed a Christian's country. So let's try help one another more. Let's touch everyone. You're not going to touch everybody's lives. But I'm sure the one that you encounter with, please let them talk about you in the near future to come.
Well, if we each touch one, that's plenty.
That is plenty, and we're going to make a difference. So let's start with one, each one, help one. That way we will have a greater and a better Bahamas. That's all I have to say for this Christmas season. Is there anything you would like to say to our Bahamian brothers and sisters?
I just want all of us who live in this country, and remember, so many of us come from different places.
What they say, the only real Bahamians were the Lakaians, the only original Bahamians, true indigenous Bahamians were the Lakaians, and we saw what happened to them. But we all have different parts of us, and we need to bring all of those parts together and focus on being Bahamian.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate what you have. I have my grandfather came here from Jamaica.
Wow.
Right? So you appreciate all of the other parts of you, but be Bahamian.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'll tell you this. This is one thing I'll say. I've sometimes seen, except for Flag Day, I understand that, right? But even then, right? If you're going to fly the Haitian flag in your car, fly the Bahamian flag too.
That's always been my... Everybody who listens to my show knows
you're both.
So yes, you are both. Yes, and that is very disrespectful. I've been telling them that, so I'm sure they got it this time. Mm-hmm. Because doing the Haitian Cultural Festival that we had in May, and coming on my show because I was actually the chairperson, second year, last year and this year, so I'm privileged. I'm humbled to say I was the chairperson of the Haitian Cultural Festival.
Okay.
I think we're gonna bring a new chair. I don't know who it will be, but we're going to have to vote for a new chair. I've had enough. I'm grateful for that. But that has always been my message. I went to the churches. I spoke about it on my show and different organizations, different groups that I'm involved in, and I told them it is very disrespectful to have just the Haitian flag. You cannot do that in no country.
Particularly if you're a Bahamian passport holder.
That's right. Yeah? And for us.
I'll tell you this, too. The other thing that really kind of annoys me, too, right? It's great to speak Creole. It's great to speak other languages. Mm-hmm. Right? I speak quite a few. So I'm not against speaking.
Hello, you do.
But my thing is, right, you can't say that you're a Bahamian and you don't speak English. That just can't. That can't fly.
No, that cannot. No.
So let's.
You have to speak English. How could you be a Bahamian and not speak English? How could you be a Bahamian and not love our food, not love this country, and not want what's best for this country? But at some point, I'm going to bring you back into the show when we get into the election season.
Oof.
Because you know that's your specialties. So you can
teach
me one or two things because you know I wanted to get a little bit of it, but I don't want to get too deep. I want to make sure I have my facts straight. So I'm going to need your specialties when that time come, when the Bahamians of Haitian descent will be, you know.
If I would say one more thing, though, because your theme of the show is to parler ensemble. Hein?
Oui.
I think we should add to that and say, for travail ensemble.
Travail ensemble.
We got to work together.
That's right. So that when that time come, when they will be voting, so that they will know what's important to the country. Mm-hmm. Which important we have to always put the country first, not because you know sometimes we tend to don't put the country first, but we put because we come from a Haitian background. Mm-hmm. No, we're gonna put the Bahamas first because this is where we live. This is where our kids go to school. This is where we represent. I don't want to go to no other country. This is my country. I don't care what nobody say.
No.
So I want what's best for here. Mm-hmm. Because when I go to the States and I go to shop, once my money finished, Julian, I ready to come home. Sometimes my money don't even be finished. I just, you know, when you in a foreign country and you feel like, oh my God, all of a sudden I didn't want the Kong salad, you know. All of a sudden I'm thinking about dirties or Kong salad. I'm like, why is this devil so busy? I can't even get it here.
And you see,
I'm like in a whole foreign country. And you
see what happened with those Bahamas Air flight cancellations.
Okay.
Guys, right? People don't spend up all their money. They
spend
only
up
got
all
like
their
a dollar.
Money. Hello?
Dollar and they're sitting up in
That's
Miami
ridiculous.
Airport.
That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. So I'm like, this devil is so busy. So it is teaching me, hey, this is that. When I think about that, that inspired me to say, wow, I want what's great for this country. I want to make sure that we in this country go in the right direction. You know, and we keep it going for all of us because I wouldn't want to live nowhere else. So I'm determined. Hello? But Julian, it was a pleasure having you on this show. It was a pleasure. Wally, do you see this? My producer is like, okay. I'm teaching him a little bit. He's learning. He's learning. Pity. He'll get there. Trust me, he'll get it. I think Wally can speak Creole undercover, you know, because Wally has been doing a lot of Haitian shows. I have to.
He's going to surprise you.
Yeah, he'll do just like what you did. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
Yes, Joyeux Noël. Bonne année.
Joyeux Noël. Uh-huh. Merry Christmas. Joyeux Noël. Bonne année. Like Julian, you're translating for me. But remember, each one, help one.
Absolutely.
That is the only way. We're going to reach. That is the only way we're going to impact this country to be better. Thank you so much to all those who are listening. Have a great Sunday, Bahamas. Please, no shooting tonight. Be safe.
Yeah.
If you are thinking about it, don't do it. Okay? Think about God first because this is a Christian.
True. There were two people killed
yesterday. Yeah,
today,
yesterday. Yeah, yesterday was two persons that got shot on Barnard Road.
Right.
Come on, we can't have this. This is Christmas time. No shooting, no more. Okay?
Absolutely.
All right, God bless you all.
God bless.